real honor to be here today with my two presidents, President Obama and President DeJoy. One of your first salaries was actually paid for by a group of Catholic churches, something Cardinal McCarrick knows that, but not a lot of Catholic bishops notice that, that you were organizing for a group of Southside churches.
Well, first of all, it's true. My first job was funded through the Campaign for Human Development, which was the social justice arm of the Catholic Church. Our faith-based groups, I think, have the capacity to frame this, and nobody's shown that better than Pope Francis, who I think has been transformative just through the sincerity and insistence that he's had that this is vital to who we are. This is vital to following what Jesus Christ, our Savior, talked about. And that emphasis, I think, is why he's had such incredible appeal, including to young people all around the world. And I hope that that is a message that that everybody receives when he comes to visit here. I can't wait to host him, because I think it will help to spark an even broader conversation of the sort that we're having today.
All events are better with a reference to Pope Francis. Thank you so much.
Hello, Georgetown. As your neighbor, I thought I'd say hello and congratulate you on the 200th anniversary of your charter. A lot's happened in Washington over two centuries, and Hoyas have always been at the center of the action. Georgetown graduates have gone on to serve as president of this country and other countries, as members of Congress, and even as basketball-crazed senior advisors working down the hall for me in the West Wing. Over the years, you've welcomed countless international students, just as Georgetown students are known for serving all over the world. Your graduates crowd the ranks of Peace Corps volunteers. Simply put, this country and this world benefit from your commitment to Jesuit principles, to being men and women for others. Here's to the next 200 years. Happy birthday. And Hoya Saxa.
Georgetown University is a self-described student-centered research university, the oldest Catholic and Jesuit institution of higher education in the United States. It was founded in 1789 by a former Jesuit, John Carroll, the first bishop and archbishop of the Roman Catholic Church in the United States of America, with approval from Benjamin Franklin. Irish-American Jesuit Friar Edmund A. Walsh founded the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service in 1919 that trained U.S. diplomats 6 years before the official U.S. Foreign Service even existed, where the Jesuits were training U.S. citizens in foreign policy. The Jesuit Friar Charles Curry is the Executive Director of Jesuit Commons. He is on the board of Georgetown University and is the president of the Association of Jesuit Colleges, as the official White House website confirms. Thomas J. Rees, another Jesuit, was appointed to the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom by President Obama. So not only did Barack Obama say that his first paycheck came from the Catholic Church and instructs us to look to Pope Francis I as a model of Christ, but he praises the benefits of Jesuit education that advises him in the White House. Why have the Jesuits become so successful? Edward Alexander Sutherland was a brilliant educator, and he wrote a book in 1900 titled Living Fountains or Broken Systems, and he documents 115 years ago why the Jesuits outsmarted Protestants. Protestantism lost much because she ceased to educate her children. Had Protestantism remained true to her first principles of education, her overthrow would have been impossible. She paved the way for her own fall by departing gradually from the gospel and by leaning more and more towards the classics and scholasticism. The Jesuits organized to combat Reformation in educational lines. As the most effective means of arresting the progress of Protestantism, it aimed at controlling education, particularly among the wealthy and noble. In rivalry with the schools of Protestant countries it developed an immense educational activity and earned for its schools a great reputation. From the close of the 16th century to the present time, they have based their teaching upon the Ratio e Institutio Tudorum Societas Jesu of Claudius Aquavia. Had Protestants been one half as diligent in advocating the principles of Christian education as the Jesuit teachers have been in counteracting the influence of the Reformation, far different results would today be seen in the world. Before Friar Adolphus Nicholas, the Superior General of the Jesuits, resigns in 2016, he can be proud not only of the success of Jesuit education and its dominance in the United States, but also working with a Jesuit Pope who is just winning the world over by his Jesuit charm, which people just can't see because they are so focused on conspiracy theories and secret societies. People spend hours watching espionage, fast car scenes, and the violence in films about the Secret Service, the corruption in governments, and terrorism. And though there are interesting points in them concerning the current state of world affairs, the papacy gets no mention as a global player on the world stage. People instead watch Henry Kissinger as one of the main architects of the New World Order. His track record is atrocious, as this book intricately documents. He has guided and steered US presidents from Richard Nixon to the current and 44th US president, Barack Obama. He has rubbed shoulders with Pope Benedict XVI, as they were both firm supporters of the late Chilean dictator, Augusto Pinochet, and he backed the brutal military junta in Argentina that led to the kidnapping and torturing of hundreds and thousands of civilians. Jorge Videla was arrested, tried, and sentenced for war crimes for his role as a dictator during Argentina's reign of terror. Jorge Bergoglio escaped being tried for war crimes and has become the most powerful man on earth. While the highest ranking Jesuit in Argentina, he oversaw and approved the horrors in Argentina, and this was highlighted during his elections by the London Guardian newspaper, but then quickly was swept under the carpet. One of the main topics in discussion today is the environment, and the Vatican's clever strategy of missionary adaptation is winning sympathy over in the most prestigious institutions in North America, laying the groundwork for papal supremacy when the Pope arrives in the United States in September 2015.
Thank you for attending. My name is John Grimm. I teach with Mary Evelyn Tucker, a joint master's degree program at Yale Forestry and Environmental Studies and Yale Divinity School. The plan for today's panel on the papal encyclical on the environment is to open with a perspective from Catholic theology, and then a panel of interdisciplinary presenters whom I will briefly introduce, followed by a question and answer session and a final summary by Dean Sterling from Yale Divinity School.
I was recently introduced to an American Harvard-educated economist called Jeremy Sachs, who regularly lectures on poverty, the injustices in the world, and the uneven balance between the rich and the poor. He is the director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University and the advisor to the United Nations' Ban Ki-moon. But in some of his tweets, he mentions his visits to the Vatican on their summits on climate change. And while attending, he sits two seats away from Ban Ki-moon in the front row, where there are other political and religious dignitaries in attendance. In an interview in the Jesuit magazine, America, he says something very interesting. He documents how the Pope will be bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ to the United States, but which one? As if they don't already have it. But he adds that he will face a society enthralled to a different idea, that of the unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. He adds that the urgent core of Francis' message which is the message of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, challenges the American idea. So he says that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are in conflict with the gospel. Where is this leading?
The system removes the threat of anyone exercising their independent will. Divergence threaten that system.
Pope Francis will come to the United States and the United Nations in New York on the occasion of the 70th anniversary of the United Nations. And at the moment when the world's 193 governments are resolved to take a step in solidarity toward a better world, on September the 25th, Pope Francis will speak to the world leaders, most likely the largest number of assembled heads of state and government in history. The groundwork is being laid. He goes on to say that Pope Francis, as key to the gospel truth, are actually not all about individual rights, but about virtues, meaning the right path to the right kind of life. The Sermon on the Mount is not a defense of the individual, but a call to humility, love, and justice. That is truth and error mixed together to destroy any form of individualism. And Jesus constantly taught individualism. Whosoever is talking about the individual, for each individual has to account for him or herself. He, singular, that overcometh, is talking again to the individual. And he that hath an ear, let him hear, is again talking not to a church organization, but to the individual. When Jesus said, "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me," he is talking to the individual. Edward Alexander Sutherland observed that subtle papal strategy by using the Holy Scriptures for its own subtle motives when he said that paganism, moreover, has but one model for all men. Its aim is to ever crush individuality and mold all characters alike. When the Pope visits America, he will also stop off in Cuba. This has already been arranged with Raul Castro, who said in the Catholic press that he will return to the Catholic Church. And in an interview he said, "I had a very agreeable meeting this morning with Pope Francis. He is a Jesuit, as you well know. I am too, in a certain sense, because I was always in Jesuit schools," Castro told reporters. Many think that Pope Francis single-handedly masterminded the stronger relations between the United States and Cuba. But as her strongest influence is via diplomacy, she has been able to influence Cuba-US relations for years, where she comes out on top as the peacemaker.
"I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic Party's candidate for president, who happens also to be a Catholic. I do not speak for my church on public matters, and the church does not speak for me."
He gave such an eloquent explanation of how you could be a patriotic American and a Catholic, and you could serve as president, that he took a great deal of the poison out of the water.
"On what together we can do."
Kennedy won the White House and became the first and so far only Catholic president of the United States. He kept a careful distance from the Vatican. But when the world was on the brink of nuclear war, he turned to the Pope for help. In October 1962, the Soviet Union started stockpiling nuclear missiles in Cuba. U.S. Navy ships formed a blockade around the island. Kennedy was in a stalemate with the Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev.
"I call upon Chairman Khrushchev to halt and eliminate this clandestine, reckless, and provocative threat to world peace."
Through a back channel, the Kennedy White House reached out to the Vatican for help. Pope John XXIII agreed, delivering a message to Moscow and taking the microphones of Vatican radio in French.
"I beg heads of state not to remain insensitive to the cry of humanity. Peace, peace,
peace." I've heard that got to Khrushchev, that he He said, the Pope is looking for peace, and he thought, you'll be the man of peace. He said, okay, I'll be the man of peace.
The missile sites had been dismantled.
Days after the address, Khrushchev withdrew the missiles, putting an end to the crisis.
Fidel Castro broke protocol, and for the first time wore a suit when meeting the head of a sovereign state, the late Pope John Paul II. And this helped to build bridges between the papacy and Cuba, where Pope John Paul II's successor, Pope Benedict XVI, also met Fidel Castro. And when Castro's health started to wane, Benedict XVI continued strengthening diplomatic ties with his brother. And this has also affected America's diplomatic ties with Cuba. And we will see where this will be leading to in the coming months. For issues like Guantanamo Bay, where innocent men from Muslim countries have been kidnapped and unfairly incarcerated for over 10 years with no trial by jury and no evidence against them to prove that they are global terrorists. But who is the United States looking to resolve and shutting down Guantanamo Bay? According to Reuters News, it is looking to the Vatican, where Rome will come out as a top global power broker and peacemaker. And all the news channels will report how wonderful she is, with no healthy discussions that will challenge her true role, including Russia Today, who are very good at news reporting, but panel discussions on the Pope are dominated by Roman Catholics, with no real challenges at all. Now, why is that? Interesting. Vladimir Putin, who founded RT, is a member of the Russian Orthodox Church and is promoting to put religion back into Russia. He strengthens diplomatic relations with the papacy with his meeting with Pope Francis I. And if you're going to heal a long rift, you'll not give a channel free license to highlight the papacy's true role in world affairs. So Putin kisses the gift of the Madonna in the Vatican. And Pope Francis I also kisses this graven image. And it would be extremely difficult to get real solid information on the papacy's role in world affairs when the corporate-controlled media, as well as the majority of the churches, has a muzzle on their mouth to keep quiet. The Vatican is very well aware of this, and she uses it to her advantage. She carefully observes the 333,000 and counting Christian denominations all at each other's throats, and she waits ever so patiently when the time is ripe to show her true colors.